Gettysburg, Waterloo, Stalingrad, they're some of history's most famous battles. What did they have in common? At their core, something valuable was at stake. So in the battle raging today over creation and evolution, what exactly is at stake? Gear up for the battle for the beginning, next on Grace to You Weekend. A prominent biologist has said that evolution is doubted only by those who are ignorant of the evidence or resist the evidence owing to emotional blocks or to plain bigotry. Well, that's pretty much the typical view today from scientists and in the media. The facts are, evolution is real. You're a fool to dismiss it. Well, what about that? With so much data supporting evolution, what is a young Earth six-day creationist to do? Can the book of Genesis hold up to the scrutiny of science? We'll consider those questions today on Grace to You Weekend, as John MacArthur continues the study titled, The Battle for the Beginning. And here's John now with a look at day four of creation.
Now, what evolution basically says is that over time, by chance, matter evolved into the entire universe. Jacques Monod won the Nobel Prize for biology. And in his book, Chance and Necessity, he says this: man is alone in the universe's unfeeling immensity out of which he emerged by chance. That's the Nobel-winning biologist. Chance alone is the source of every innovation. Chance alone is the source of all creation in the biosphere. He writes, pure chance, absolutely free but blind, is at the very root of this stupendous edifice of evolution. So Monod says it's just chance. Noted evolutionist J.W. Burrow writes in his Introduction to the Origin of Species, nature, according to Darwin, was the product of blind chance and a blind struggle, and man a lonely, intelligent mutation scrambling with the brutes for his sustenance. To some, the sense of loss was irrevocable. It was as if an umbilical cord had been cut and men found themselves part of a cold, passionless universe. Unlike nature as conceived by the Greeks, the Enlightenment, and the rationalist Christian tradition, Darwinian nature held no clues for human conduct and no answers to human moral dilemmas, end quote. I mean, man was just cut loose from any meaning whatsoever. He is a lonely, intelligent mutation produced out of chance. He is protoplasm waiting to become manure. Now that is a far cry from being created in the image of God. This evolutionary idea, it not only strips man of his dignity and his meaning, this is more than just stupid, it is more than irrational, it is more than depressing, it is more than humiliating, it is more even than immoral. This evolutionary idea is deadly. And in our history, our recent history in Western civilization, no one demonstrated the deadly character of this evolutionary idea better than Adolf Hitler. And he was followed up by Joseph Stalin and all of those who massacred and masses of people, millions of people, and committed genocide. At the bottom, at the base of their belief system and philosophy was evolution. Julian Huxley, a biologist and evolutionist, wrote Essays of a Humanist in 1964, said, evolution is the most powerful, most comprehensive idea that has ever arisen on earth. And you know what? He's right. It is the single greatest satanic lie the world has ever known, because it eliminates the need for a creator. People can avoid God altogether, particularly the biblical God. Darwin didn't care if you wanted to worship another God. I don't think Hitler cared if you wanted to worship another God, just not the God of the Bible. Just not the God who created. When Darwin first published his Origin of the Species, it was largely rejected by the scientific world of his day. Because they universally held to a belief in divine creation, there was no other rational explanation. You have effect, you have to have a cause. When he wrote Origin of the Species, of course, it had critical reviews from the very outset. The scientific world was almost wholly against it. In later years, Thomas Huxley, speaking of the year 1860, described the situation by saying, and I quote, "The supporters of Mr. Darwin's views were numerically extremely insignificant. There is not the slightest doubt that if a general council of the Church Scientific had been held at that time, we should have been condemned by an overwhelming majority." It was a hard sell. Even Darwin had a hard time with it. If you read anything of Darwin's, you find he's continually filling all his writings with tremendous doubts. For example, he says in the 6th chapter of his Origin of Species, "Long before having arrived at this part of my work, a crowd of difficulties will have occurred to the reader. Some of them are so grave that to this day I can never reflect on them without being staggered." In his chapter on instinct, he conceded such simple instincts as bees making a beehive could be sufficient to overthrow my whole theory. "And to think," he said, "that the eye could evolve by natural selection seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest possible degree." In his chapter on imperfections in the geological record, he complained that the complete lack of fossil intermediates in all geological records was perhaps, quote, "the most obvious and gravest objection which can be urged against my theory." In other words, he was at least honest enough to admit that the thing didn't make any sense. Darwin wrote that he was deeply conscious of his own ignorance. In his personal letters, he wrote about having awful misgivings of having deluded myself and devoted myself to a fantasy. But Darwin was determined to escape from a personal God at all costs. He said that. "I am determined to escape from design and a personal God at all costs." To the end of his life, he was in that war. Trying as he would to escape from God, he never really could. And finally, his emotional life atrophied under the strain of the battle, religious feelings disappeared, and with it everything else. The world became cold and dead. And in the end, Darwin apparently received a taste of his own medicine. He had deprived the universe of God and all meaning, and so he had deprived himself of all meaning. James Moore wrote a biography of Darwin called "The Life of a Tormented Evolutionist." In some of his letters, Darwin referred to his theory, quote, as the devil's gospel. And even after he had sort of won the day, because he did liberate men from the God of the Bible, he did free people to enjoy their sin without the thought of a judge, he had begun to win the battle, but his psychological suffering was so profound, his physical symptoms continued. He was literally not only killing God for himself, but killing God for everybody else. One writer says his life was one long attempt to escape from the church and to escape from God. It is this that explains so much that would otherwise be incongruous in his life and character. Though let's just get the record straight here. This is all about getting rid of God. The God of the Bible, the authority of Scripture with its moral implications. And even Christian people who want to go to Genesis, I don't believe, have the liberty to tell us that Genesis 1 doesn't mean what it says. Why would we want to join forces with those whose effort is directly against the authority of the God of Scripture? I just need to put that in perspective. Now, for a few minutes, I want to get a little philosophical. I think you'll enjoy this. In the end, the evolutionist, the naturalistic evolutionist says, and even the theistic evolutionist says, that things happen by chance. Chance. We get rid of the God of the Bible, we get rid of the God of Genesis, we get rid of the Creator, and then we've got chance. Now, this is a pretty interesting thing to think about. I have read this word chance over and over and over again in reading the writings of these people. And the myth that drives the whole evolutionary process, this entire unbiblical, irrational, immoral idea of evolution, the myth that drives it is the myth of chance. Chance. Chance is the cause. In contemporary science, chance takes on new meaning. They don't want God to be the cause, but something has to be the cause, so the cause is chance. Now, when I say the word chance, we take it back to its etymology, it once was largely restricted to describing mathematical probability. Or we could say, well, if I go over there, there's a chance I might see her because she may be coming this way. Or if I put this money in this account, there's a chance this might happen and I'll make this amount of money. If I move into that community and begin to meet some people, there's a chance there that I might develop some interest in my business. There's a mathematical probability. That's what chance basically used to mean. And then it kind of got broadened a little bit, and it took on broader application to include any unpredictable event, any sort of probability, no matter how remote, or any coincidence, no matter how seemingly impossible. But let me tell you about chance. Friends, chance doesn't exist. It's nothing. It's nothing. Chance is a word used to explain something else. But chance isn't anything. It's not a force. Chance doesn't make anything happen. Chance doesn't exist. It's only a way to explain something else. Chance didn't make you meet that person. You were going there when she was going there. That's why you met her. Chance didn't have anything to do with it because chance doesn't exist. It's nothing. But in modern evolution, it's been transformed into a force of causal power. It's been elevated from being nothing to being everything. Chance makes things happen. Chance is the myth that serves to undergird the chaos view of reality. I mean, this is so fraught with problems from a rational or philosophical viewpoint, you hardly know where to begin. How do you get the initial matter upon which chance operates? Where does that come from? You would have to say, well, chance made it appear. You know what? This sounds so ridiculous, and yet this is the undergirding philosophy behind evolution. It is completely incoherent and irrational. But the new evolutionary paradigm is chance. And it's the opposite of logic. You see, when you abandon logic, and logic says, oh, there's a universe. Somebody made it. What else would logic say? There's a building. Somebody made it. There's a piano. Somebody made it. There's a universe. More complex than a building, infinitely more complex than a piano. Somebody who's very, very powerful and very, very intelligent made it. You say, no. No, chance made it. Listen, folks, that's rational suicide. That's not logical. The logic abandoned leaves you with myth. And the enemies of mythology, the enemies of mythology are empirical data and God-given reason. So in order to be an evolutionist and believe that chance makes things happen, you have to do two things. Reject the empirical data and be irrational. But if you love your sin enough, you'll do it. You see, if you can just eliminate the empirical data, the evidence, and get rid of God-given logic, and those two things are the essence of pure science, if you can get rid of those things, then mythology runs wild. And as one writer said, chance is the new soft pillow for science to lie down on. Arthur Kessler said, as long as chance rules, God is an anachronism. If chance rules, God can't rule. Chance deposes God. The very existence of chance rips God from his sovereign throne. If chance as a force exists even in the frailest form, God is ungodded. There's such a word. two are mutually exclusive. Either there is a God who created the universe, who sovereignly rules and sovereignly controls, or there's not. If chance exists, it destroys God's sovereignty. If God is not sovereign, then he's not God. If he's not God, then there is no God. And chance rules. That's frightening. But chance is not a force. Chance can't make anything happen. Chance isn't anything. It doesn't exist. It has no power to do anything because it isn't anything. It's impotent because it's nothing. It has no power because it doesn't exist. Are you getting it? Since chance doesn't exist, it can't produce anything. It can't be the cause of any effect. Yet modern evolutionists talk about chance all the time. It's just nothing but hocus pocus. It's the oldest and most inviolable law of science, logic, and reason. Any of you who ever took debate or studied any of the rational philosophers, remember the statement, ex nihilo nihilo fit, out of nothing, nothing comes, and chance is nothing. This is rational suicide. So when scientists attribute instrumental power to chance, listen carefully, they have left the domain of reason. They have left the domain of science. They have turned to pulling rabbits out of hats. They have turned to fantasy. And then all scientific investigation becomes chaotic and absurd because it can't really yield what it should yield because they won't allow it to. Today, the absurdity of evolution goes largely unchallenged. And all these universities and colleges, they keep pounding on this stuff. Every time I pick up a Newsweek or a Time magazine, I get another one of these wild kind of evolutionary articles, particularly because I read National Geographic. I'm exposed to that as well. And they keep trying to make us believe that chance exists as a force, that everything by chance spontaneously generated. Nobel laureate, George Wald, brilliant man, I quote him, "One has only to wait. Time itself performs the miracles. Given so much time, the impossible becomes possible, the possible probable, and the probable actually certain," end quote. What in the world is that? That is just double talk. That is absolutely meaningless. Self-creation is absurd, no matter how much time, because chance does not exist. Doesn't exist. There's no explanation of the universe without God. I'll give you one little scientific illustration. Have you ever heard of quantum theory? Well, you've heard about a quantum leap. People say somebody made a quantum leap. Let me tell you where that comes from. Quantum theory goes back to a scientist, Max Planck, who in 1900 presented the theory that energy comes in discrete units called quanta. Now, I'm not going to take you too deep here because I can't go too deep myself. But energy can be broken down into units, and he said these units, identifiable units, are called quanta. In 1927, Werner Heisenberg, a German physicist, found that when a photon strikes an atom, it boosts an electron into a higher orbit. And when that occurs, the electron moves from the lower to the upper orbit, listen to this, simultaneously without having transversed the intervening space. That's a quantum leap. Let me say that again. When a photon hits an atom, it boosts an electron to a higher orbit from the lower orbit simultaneously, but it never transverses the space in between. What happens is the electron ceases to exist at one point and simultaneously comes into existence at the other point. This is the famous quantum leap. It goes out of existence and comes into existence simultaneously. All the time, in all the atoms, all the time, through all of created history, it keeps doing that. By chance? To say it's a quantum leap doesn't explain it. There's only one thing that explains it, and that is the ongoing creative power of God. He sustains the universe and its creation by keeping up all the necessary creative acts, even down to the level of an electron in an atom. He upholds all things, Hebrews 1, by the word of his power.
That's John MacArthur, pastor, author, and president of the Master's College and Seminary, both in Southern California. His current study on Grace to You Weekend is showing you that, bottom line, the Bible and evolution don't mix. The study is titled The Battle for the Beginning. You know, you may find yourself intimidated into thinking that science has all the answers and the Bible, a religious book, has nothing to add to a scientific discussion about origins. So, John, what about that? What contribution can an ordinary Christian, a layperson, really have in the creation-evolution debate?
Well, the truth of the matter, Carl, is that science has no right to discuss origins. That's right, they have no right to discuss origins. Because all science can do is look at the way things are, which doesn't tell you anything about how they came to be the way they are. That ought to be fairly obvious. It wouldn't matter how much scientific study you did on the macrocosm and the microcosm of the universe. It wouldn't matter how detailed you got in assessing the life realities and life forces in everything in the plant and animal kingdom. You still wouldn't know how things came to be the way they are. The only way you'd know that is to have personal testimony, personal revelation from the Creator. And that is exactly what the Bible provides. I want to tell you about a book that I've written that will explain this and a whole lot more. It's called The Battle for the Beginning. It examines what God says about the origin of the universe, which is the only way we can know anything about it. It offers a step-by-step analysis of what happened during each of the 6 days of creation and how they match real science perfectly. This is a soft cover book, a few hundred pages, available from Grace to You. It'll give you some answers. Reasonably priced, ask for the book, The Battle for the Beginning.
Make sure you have the knowledge that you need to answer the evolutionists, to defend God's Word from page one. Pick up your copy of John's book, The Battle for the Beginning, when you call or write us today. Our toll-free number is 1-800-55-GRACE, or order online at gty.org. The Battle for the Beginning book is reasonably priced and shipping is free. Again, call 1-800-55-GRACE or order online at gty.org. Remember, too, that our current study, the audio study, is called The Battle for the Beginning, too. You can order the entire series on 12 CDs at an affordable price, and that includes free shipping. Order it as you call 1-800-55-GRACE or order online at gty.org. Or put these lessons right onto your computer or iPod. Download all 12 free in the MP3 format. In fact, all of John's sermons, 3,000 total, are available free at the Grace to You website. So log on today and start downloading. And then let me ask you for your prayers and financial support. To express your support and let us know what the broadcast means to you, please write today, Grace to You, Weekend, Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. And now for John MacArthur, I'm Carl Miller, reminding you that Grace to You television is available every Sunday on DirecTV Channel 378, or you can watch online at gty.org. And remember, our daily radio broadcast can be heard Monday through Friday in your area, so check the website for stations and times. And then join us right here for another 30 minutes of Unleashing God's Truth, one verse at a time, on Grace to You Weekend.